Welcome to Reframe, the podcast where we challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be joined by expert researchers from Nottingham Trent University. Whether you're a curious mind or a critical thinker, listen as we unpack common beliefs and offer fresh perspective on the headlines that shape our world. In today's episode, we're questioning the idea that the end of war signifies peace for all. I'm joined by Dr. Blarina Kalesi, Associate Professor in Social and Trauma Psychology at NTU, whose research investigates the complex matter of how people collectively deal with life-changing events like war, dictatorship, and the long road to justice. She has worked with over 1,000 survivors who have experienced severe human rights violations and trauma, resulting in a deep understanding of the depth and complexity of human experiences. Blarina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Blarina, many people assume that once two countries at war declare a ceasefire, it means a peaceful ending. Can you share what the reality often looks like in the aftermath?
Yeah, so it's a very sad reality. So if you think of two countries at war and think of immediately what happens in the aftermath, a lot of people have been displaced. There's been a huge amount of destruction. So amongst the first thing that they'll do is they'll look for their loved ones. And sadly, they'll look for their loved ones for decades and decades. But they'll continue looking. And they'll address the immediate emergencies, like medical emergencies, finding a shelter, finding food, finding safety. So very often men would have been involved in fighting in war and die, and a lot of women would be left with the children and care of the elderly. So they have to immediately meet that reality of how do I look after the children? How do I keep them safe? How do I feed them? So not just in the immediate aftermath, in the longer term as well, there's been so much destruction. There's been destruction kind of the physical infrastructure, the hospitals, places where people live. It's been also the destruction of the whole kind of the political system, the social system. That will take decades to build. And sadly, what happens also, that very often there's instability within the country itself because of the destructions of the war. So there will be unrest, there will be even civil wars continuing in the countries. There'll be huge inequalities, and they'll create unrest as well. So it transforms in a very different form. It's no longer a war between countries, but it can remain a war within the country. However, the war between countries doesn't end there as well. These are historical wars. These have been going on for centuries. So people will still maintain that fear that the war will repeat itself. So it's almost like a status of temporary ceasefire. What is going to happen next? So people will kind of battle with that fear about the future, and they will need to prepare themselves and their future generations about what's going to happen in the future. So it's just a different form of battle for the people on the ground.
So could you explain how the trauma from war affects not just the individuals, but the entire communities over time?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing we know quite well is how it affects individuals. So our whole kind of psychology and psychiatry knowledge has been built around the impact on the individual. So we know that many people develop post-traumatic stress responses, including post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety and depression. And these can be lifelong because what happens in war is so severe that it can completely transform how they feel about life. It will even transform their world vision, that the world is not a safe place, that our future is at risk, and so completely how they see the world and their future is transformed. So this is at the individual level. But you can capture already this is not an individual reality. So that's where research comes in quite a lot. We try and understand what happens at the community level. So communities are transformed from the harm, from the threats, from the distractions of the war. But then they are also transformed in how they respond to the wars. For some people, they want to forget what's happened. They want to completely focus on the future. They want to focus on those aspects that they can rebuild. Because they think that is the best way to live their life. That is the best way to fulfill their life. Others just cannot do that. They cannot forget what has happened because that reality is so much a psychological reality and it's a social reality. In fact, for some people, they feel that if you forget, if you don't talk about what has happened, there is a harm for the future. So it's very dangerous to forget the harms of the war because that means that you're not prepared. You don't understand. You don't prepare the next generation for what's coming. So this huge division of I want to be heard, I want to be valued for what I've experienced, I want people to understand my suffering, to we shouldn't talk about it, we don't want to hear anymore about this, that huge division. And there's another category of people that have experienced things that we have called unspeakable, so gender-based violence is one of them. Things that the communities just do not want to hear about. There is so much stigma that the survivors themselves do not want to talk about. So very often communities become then further kind of sources of harm because they do not allow the survivors to do what they need to do, which is to speak, to kind of seek validation and to seek justice. That's a big part of it. How can you seek justice if you can't speak, if you're not heard, if your own community doesn't want to recognize the harm that you've experienced?
So it must cause so much conflict amongst those that have survived and within those communities.
Absolutely. It's very sad because community on one hand are the key resources that people have to cope with what has happened. So what we know from trauma research is that the traumatic events, especially in war, can make you feel so alienated from the world and from other people. So you need that connection with others. That is so important to provide support, to talk, to make sense of what you've experienced, to come together and bring about change. So we call that collective action. So you need that, especially from people who have gone through the same experience. So one hand, that is the most powerful source of support and recovery. And then on certain conditions, that very community does not allow you, either directly or indirectly, to talk about what they've experienced. In part because it's emotionally too painful, too difficult to cope with what other people have experienced. For example, the missings, I've done so much research with the missing families. They know that other people find it very difficult to hold their pain. Their pain is continuous for decades and decades. How can you live decades of your life with carrying that pain or kind of witnessing the pain on other people? So some of it is done because the communities themselves can't cope with it. And some of it is done around stigma. Some of it is done because they just want to focus on themselves. And that is also the right thing to do for them. You need to live your life after war. So it's recognizing the different versions of what people need to survive, but that can bring harm, especially when it comes to seeking justice, because if you're not united, achieving that change is very difficult.
So how does war and the aftermath affect like future generations, those that have never even experienced themselves?
Yeah, that's such an important point, because it kind of recognizes how long-lasting the impact of war can be. There's layers, of course, like everything you've seen probably, there is layers, and there's no simple answers to any of these. So the first is psychological. They witness either directly or indirectly the impact of that war. So in the families, you see very often it's spoken about what's happened for a number of reasons. They will hear what has happened, they will hear, and they will experience this emotional pain because families and communities are important to us, we care about them. So if they are suffering, we suffer with them. So the next generation will have this emotional pain that they will experience. They will also experience bonding. So it's very important that the new generation and the old generation understand each other. So if they don't talk, if they don't understand what the older generation is suffering, then they'll be divided. So that talking on one hand can be very painful, on the other can be very beneficial. But they will also experience other types of harms, not just psychological. So inequalities will persist even more after war. There will be so much to rebuild. So those younger generations that have would have suffered the most, that have lost their parents, they don't have the options to become educated very often. They don't have the options to survive economically. So they will persevere with economic inequalities across different generations. And then there are kind of the political inequalities as well and social inequalities. So there will be that different impact on the new generations. What's important is also that the new generations then will be passed on this responsibility for justice. So they need to fight to redress the harm of the past. They need to fight to make sure that war doesn't happen again. So they are passed on this responsibility, this worldview that is very negative, and it's a reality for them. So for a lot of us, the worldview is that the world is safe and we can predict and we can live lives in a way that we think we can. But if you live in a war zone or nearby, your worldview is very, very different because that reality is different. The war can happen again. It happened. You can see the conditions where it happens again. So that new generation has got a very different worldview because they're left with the legacy of the harm, but also the responsibility about the present redress and future justice.
What do the people and communities need to do once the conflict is over?
That's very important as well. And it feels in one way, so difficult that the communities who have suffered the war have to again continue working to rebuild things. It's kind of still left to them to rebuild things. But the main thing they need is justice. and we have written and researched justice. And what we mean by justice is very, very broad. So we mean two major categories. One is justice related directly to the war. This is called transitional justice. And one is what we call social justice. So in terms of transitional justice, what they need to do is they need to provide support to their members. And that is psychological support, social support, but also it's not just the communities, the states themselves need to provide the conditions where those who are still suffering with the legacies of the war are able to rebuild their lives, either through psychological support, through economic support, through education, through social support, whatever it is they need to be able to rebuild their lives, to redress some of the harm of the past. But again, communities and states need to also provide that opportunity to prevent future harms. So themselves, the communities shouldn't harm their members through kind of avoiding talking about what has happened or providing support. But states also need to build whatever is possible to stop the harm from happening again, to stop the wars from happening again. And you can easily see that it can't be just a state who has been at war that is responsible here. It's the other state that was at war with them. So both countries were at war, but also the international community needs to have a responsibility, kind of ensuring that these harms don't happen again. And then there is the social justice aspect, which I was saying earlier, increases so much more after war. There's so many social inequalities. We have gender inequalities, we have inequalities based on socioeconomic status, and so much more that are specific to the context where the wars happen. So these need to be addressed as well. So very often women in war are left to care for the children solely, and they're left to care for the elderly. How can we help them rebuild their lives if their reality as women is not completely transformed, not only in relation to what happened to the war, but also giving them the opportunity to, in some countries they don't have right to property, for example, or the right to work. So how can we ensure that they are completely able to rebuild their lives, and they need support around that?
And so you've talked a lot about the support and obviously the research that has been happening. What is in place now that hasn't been before, or have we seen much change in that space?
Not very much, sadly. So what happens at international level is that we have a lot of international organizations who can do a wonderful job in providing aid, but in providing kind of immediate responses of psychological support. So Doctors Without Borders and so on. They go in and provide that kind of infrastructure of training and direct support. There is a little bit of that. But unless that change happens within the communities, within the resources of the communities, it can't be sustainable. So, for example, if the stigma for gender-based violence is happening from the community, the change that needs to happen from the community, there is no outside support that can change that. The communities themselves need to recognize what is it that we're doing, both in a powerful way. If we're enabling people to survive, we'll do more of that. But also, in what ways are we undermining the suffering of others? In what ways are we maintaining that harm? So they can do a lot in providing direct psychological support, social support, ensuring that people who have suffered the most are integrated in the social life, in the cultural life of the community, and then in supporting them to achieve justice, to kind of make sure that the harm is redressed, but also that the conditions are created that doesn't happen again in the future.
Bluina, thank you so much for giving us an insight into actually life after conflict, and actually how difficult it obviously is. And I think it can be very easy when you've not experienced that, or, you know, it's not a part of our society at the moment in the UK. So thank you so much for that. If you wanted our listeners to go away with one insight, one takeaway, what would that be?
That we all have a responsibility. It doesn't matter where we live. We are part of that international community. We can put pressure on our nations and our politicians to make sure that they do their best to prevent harm, to prevent wars in the future, but also to support where those wars happen, to support the survivors to rebuild their nations.
Bluina, once again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
If you'd like to hear more about Bluina's work, please have a look in the episode description.
You've been listening to the Reframe podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on LinkedIn at NTU Research, or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research.